live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And when we're talking about 20 feet from stardom, oh my gosh, every time I get to talk to another one that was part of this, it's amazing because I love hearing the stories about backup singers and the struggles they've gone through to try to make it and the stories and how important they are in part of the whole thing. And to be an Academy Award winning, being part of an Academy Award winning documentary is amazing. So I want to welcome the program, Dr. Mabel John. Dr. Mabel, thanks for calling and thanks for being on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. How are you today?
I am doing fantastic. I'm counting the days of winding down. My wife's a school teacher, and I'm the entrepreneur that has a tutoring business and also does the radio thing, and I'll be looking forward to having some freedom for the next couple of months because I will be full-time and not having to, you know, help my wife out in a lot of the work end things. So, hey, it's really good. But I tell you, I bet you're very enthused since the Academy Award winning for this. I'm sure that you've just been pumped up by being part of this.
Well, it's always music, you know, is the sentiment of our hearts. And what we do musically is as much a part of us as our name. And it's always a pleasure when the public enjoys whatever it is that we have to present.
Absolutely. It's just,
but you know, winning an Oscar is the ultimate joy.
Exactly. Did you? And I've talked to two people already on this. Did you think this was going to win an Oscar?
Did I think it was going to win an Oscar?
Yeah.
I had the inkling because people are very interested in music, and they're interested in knowing how you make it work. And I knew that the producers had really come up on something that would be an attention getter. I didn't know necessarily that we were going to get an Oscar, but I did feel that the movie would be a hit.
And once you found out it got an Oscar, I'm sure you were just like blown away, saying, "Wow, what an opportunity to."
Well, I just said, "What a blessing!" Because before Oscar time came, it was so much information that was going on about the film, and it was promoted very well. And I said, "You know, this film is going to really be on people's minds a long time." So we were all very thankful, very grateful, and very excited.
And Dr. Mabel, I think the whole fact is now, because of the notoriety, so many people are going to get to see this documentary that might have never seen it and get to see specifically the stories of all of you. And I think that's the most exciting part about it, is that, you know, that's the free publicity that you're getting and the opportunity for more and more people to know about this whole story of how all of you were reaching for the stars and how much you were part of music history in so many ways.
That's right. And it's so good in an educational standpoint, because there are so many of our young people that love music. They want to get into it. They want to make money, but they really don't have the direction that they need. And I think this film opens the door for them to have an insight on how they should go about it, what they should expect, what they should be willing to stand on, because you have to know exactly what you want. You might not know how to attain it, but you have to know when something is offered to you that you should not accept. So it plays a very, very good part in the lives of young people that's interested in the field of music.
Absolutely. So tell me specifically how you broke into the music business.
Well, I don't really have a sob story or group of bad experiences that a lot of the other young ladies and men had getting into show business. My brother is the late Little Willie John.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, you heard of him, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
He's passed on, of course. But because he went into show business first, and the whole family decided that we would learn the business of show business so that we could all support my brother.
Yes.
It gave me a good insight on what to do and what not to do. And, of course, I don't classify myself as a real background singer because I was a single artist 15 years before I ever went to work with Ray Charles. And I did not go through a lot of the things that the ladies went through.
Okay.
So my story is that anybody can make it.
Yes.
It doesn't matter who you are. If you have something to offer, develop your craft, keep a clear head, know when you're being prostituted, and I don't mean man and woman.
Yes.
I mean your talent prostituted.
Yes.
And stand on your morals. Whatever your standards are, don't change your standard, because that's going to change what's going to happen in getting you to where you want to go. So many people, they are easily bought out because they buy into someone telling them that this can't be done.
Most definitely.
And if people tell you that long enough and you start believing it,
you give up.
You will start doing a lesser thing instead of doing the greater thing.
Absolutely. So you were starting out, you said, before becoming a background singer, you were basically just...
I was a single artist.
A single artist.
I was signed to Motown.
Okay.
I was signed to Berry Gordy as an artist. He was my manager.
Wow.
Before that was a Motown. And then when he started Motown... I became the first single female artist that he signed to the company.
How fantastic, yeah.
And then I left Motown because I was on Tamla. I didn't feel that my kind of music was the direction that the company was headed to, so I didn't want to get lost in the shuffle. And then I was signed to Sax Records in Memphis, Tennessee. And, of course, my producers were Isaac Hayes and David Porter. And when I got to Memphis, they didn't have anything for me because they didn't know me, and they wanted to get a feel of what I wanted to do and how they wanted to direct the music in that direction. So the first thing that I did with Sax is now a classic, and that's Your Good Thing Is About to Come to an End. Written by Isaac Hayes, David Porter, and myself. And it was just a matter of me having Isaac play something on the piano, just anything. And I told a story, partial story of my life, a marriage story.
Yes.
And between he and I and David Porter, we came up with The Good Thing's About to Come to an End. I traveled for a few years with my brother, opening the show for him. And that's where I met Sam and Dave. They were living in Miami at the time, and Sam and Dave were opening for my brother, the late Bill Willie John. So after those years, I was recruited by Ray Charles, not really as a background singer, but as the lead singer for the Raylettes, the Ray Charles Raylettes. I was his lead singer, and we recorded one album there, but we did some singles also there.
Oh, wow.
So...
your story's much...
That's how my story goes.
Your story's much different than a lot of the other people in the documentary, it sounds like, for sure.
Exactly. And we learned with Ray Charles how to sing all kinds of music. So you cannot say I'm not good on a country show because I don't sing country. I only sing rock because we sang country with Ray Charles. I can't say that I don't sing rock. I only sing the blues because we sang some rock with Ray Charles. And then when it came down to singing soul music or what people call the blues, I don't take a back seat to anyone because I'm gifted in that area. So with Ray Charles, I had a chance to complete a certain facet of my musical career because I learned with him exactly who I was in music, exactly what my audience wanted from me in music. And then I learned a lot of technique from Ray Charles. So the lessons never end.
Never.
But I don't have a bad report story of anything bad happening to me. I never had a record company that owed me money and didn't pay me.
That's the good news. There's a lot that did, for sure.
And so people need to hear good news and good reports, as well as hearing reports of people that was maybe taken or taken advantage of. Because there you have two sides. You have the side, if I don't take care of business, I can lose my dream.
Yes.
If I take care of business and stand on my dream, I can live my dream.
Absolutely.
And that's an important part of 20 Feet from Stardom.
It definitely is. And you did, would you say, did you reach the star? You, in your opinion, did you reach it, or were you, by being with Ray Charles, you never reached exactly what you were looking for, or you think you did reach where you wanted to go?
I did, and I still do. Mm-hmm. Number one, if you learn each lesson on each plateau, wherever you are, you stay there, you do your best, you observe, and you apply the knowledge that you gain. When you finish that course, you're then ready for another course. Now, let me tell you something. People that smart know, you never get through learning.
Exactly.
When you stop learning, you are finished.
You're finished.
And did you know, I learned that my audience was one of my greatest teachers.
Yes.
After you get theory and experience, that means the opportunity to do it. The audience is the people that puts the final approval on who you are and what you are to them, because they come, everyone that buy a ticket performance has something in mind that they're looking for from that artist that's on that show. And number one, I don't embark upon anything without praying first.
All right.
Because people belong to God.
Yes.
So before I do any performance, after I have learned about the venue where I'm going to work and the kind of reception or the kind of sales I've had in that area with past music, then I pray and I ask God to give me that audience.
Yes.
Because they belong to Him. Allow the people to understand what I'm trying to say to them in music and allow them to accept it and be as joyful about it as I am.
Absolutely. That's
and I think that's the winning key.
It's definitely the winning key, because I mean that's how I live my motto in my life, is doing work for God, and that's how I try to do my whole life. Anything, any profession that I do throughout the day of any type of work, I'm doing it for God. And I think that brings we know we're instruments. We are not
right.
we're not the person. It's not about us. It's about God and how we can touch people's lives in specific ways in so many ways. So how, after this has happened, now tell us what's going on with your career now after the great Oscar winning performance. What are you doing right now? What are your current projects?
Well, I'm putting together a group of songs that I've recorded either in film or recorded as commercial recordings, and adding 28 feet from stardom to my bio, because we feel that when you reach the status of the Oscar, there's nothing in the industry bigger than the Oscar.
Nothing bigger.
There's nothing bigger than Oscar but God.
Yes.
And so myself, along with some of the other ladies, Susay Green and Charlotte Crossley, we've decided to turn it into a musical educational scene and do some things together and do some of all of the music that we've done all of our lives and perform to the people, but touch the young people, because they're the ones that's reaching to get to where we've already been and where we are now.
Absolutely.
And that's what we do. I have a ministry, Joy in Jesus Evangelistic Outreach Ministry. It's an outreach to help educate, feed, clothe, and mentor people that are in need.
Right.
And we do that on a daily basis. And we have never stopped. None of us have not stopped performing. We're still performing, still recording. And we're not beginning in it. We are continuing it.
Fantastic.
This is a continuation, because that's a whole other world of people that have never heard us, because they're just getting and becoming of age.
I'm learning from the three so far I've had on the show, you and learning from Charlo and specifically, and it's just like amazing to know the stories and to know what's going on. And everyone,
right.
you all have unbelievable stories. I mean, it's
everybody
just,
has an unbelievable story. And the children, the young people, will grasp it, and they'll know how to take today's technology with their talent and with our history and achieve their goal.
Absolutely.
In a much easier way. And they won't have the testimony of such a hard life if they follow and stand on our shoulders, because that's what we're asking them to do. Stand on our shoulders and keep it going. Because that's our legacy, and that legacy is not to go to waste, but it's for people to learn that legacy so you can build one of your own.
Absolutely. Well,
because it's possible.
You're tremendous for sure, Dr. Mabel. So where can we find information on you and learn more about you, purchase your music and all those places? Where do we need to go?
You need to go to MabelJohn.com, and you have to spell my name, MABLE.com. Or you can go on my ministry website, which is Joy, J-O-Y-N-I-N, Jesus, J-E-S-U-S, .org. And you can link on to the work we do, the performances, our music. You can buy my music on CD Baby and Amazon.com. And the sax music is now administered by Concord Music here in California. And the Ray Charles catalog is there. My sons and I have 52 songs that we share with the Ray Charles Publishing Company and my publishing company, which is Otis Music, the Otis Music Group. Or you can just simply Google my name, MABLEJOHN, and listen to a lot of my performances on there.
Well, fantastic. Thanks for being on the show, and best of luck, and let me know when you have any huge news to report. You're welcome to come back on the show again. Tell more stories of playing with Ray Charles and your days in Motown. It was just an honor to have you on the show and to learn so much
about it. Thank you so much.
But
would you also email me your information so I can contact you by email?
Absolutely. I will definitely do that for you. Okay?
Okay. Right. Have a wonderful day.
All right, you too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, and Instagram, Total Tutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. So I want to welcome one of the last Supremes, Sherry Payne. Sherry, thanks for calling, and thanks for sharing your story with me. How are you?
I'm doing just great. It's beautiful weather here in L.A.
It's beautiful in Pittsburgh, so at least we can bottle June and say, you know, anywhere in June, hopefully we have beautiful weather. Or I feel for people, maybe in Australia it's not beautiful in June, but at least where we're at, for sure.
Right.
If I was calling you in December, we don't want to talk about that. I'd say, get me to L.A. in seconds. All right, Sherry, so I tell you, I'm sure how enthused you were about 20 Feet from Stardom and the Oscar, right? It's got to be just an unbelievable blessing for sure.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. And I didn't even know that my friends Charlo Crossley and Sue Spay and Dr. Mabel were even in it until I walked into the theater and I saw them on the screen. I saw Dr. Mabel in the lobby, and I was chatting with her, and I thought she had just come to see it like I had. And she didn't even tell me that she was in it. She was like the first person I saw. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And then Charlo appeared on the screen, and I had spoken to Charlo as I was going to my seat. I passed right by her. She's a dear friend of mine. I love her. And I said, Charlotte didn't even tell me she was in it. And then when I saw Sue Spay, I gasped. I said, there's Sue Spay. I said, nobody told me. I was so excited and happy for them.
So to have your friends be part of that and just and such so awesome. And so you were just going to the theater to watch it and say, well, this reminds me of absolutely my career for sure. And then when you saw the people that were in it, you're like, wow.
Like, wow. Then I saw Edna Wright from The Honeycomb. Darlene Love's sister, and I know Darlene as well. My sister has worked with Darlene. They've done shows together and called it Love and Pain, which is very great. And then I saw Edna, and then Tata Vega. Like, all my friends are in this. It's fantastic.
Absolutely. So tell us specifically enough your story. Being one of the last Supremes, tell us how you started your recording career.
I started it with Invictus Records in Detroit in 1968 is when they put us together initially with a group called The Glass House. And Edward was talking with my sister when she happened to be home, because she was always traveling and living in New York. And she happened to be home, and I was loudly playing in the living room one of the songs I had written, really on purpose. Loudly playing, and so Edward called me to the phone and asked me, what was I playing? I said, oh, just a tune I wrote. He said, do you have any others? I said, oh, yeah, I have a bunch. He said, well, would you like to play some for us, audition for our new company, Invictus? You know, we've left Motown, and your sister signed with us. And I said, sure, I don't care. So they sent a car around and took me over to Lamont Dozier's house, and I played about four or five of my songs, and then they had me come down to the company the next day, and I signed a contract. Well, they didn't need another lead singer. They had already had Frida. They had Edna and the Honeycomb. They had, I think, Eloise Laws. They had just signed Laura Lee. So they said, well, we'll build a group around you. You and Ty Hunter, who was Lamont Dozier's best friend. And Ty was a fantastic singer and had single hits on his own at that time, or before that. So they built a group around Ty and myself, and we ended up with initially, Gloria Hendry was the other. Well, Gloria went on. She only stayed a few months, and then she decided it wasn't really quite what she wanted, and so she went back to New York, and she became one of the James Bond girls in his movies. And she's still a good friend to this day. But then they got Pearl Jones and Larry Mitchell, and The Glass House was formed. And so we had a minor hit called Crumbs Off the Table, which I co-wrote, and which coincidentally was in the movie The Paperboy with Nicole Kidman and Matthew McConaughey back in 2012-13. You can still buy it on DVD. And it's Laura Lee's version. I sang it first at The Glass House, which is a minor hit, and then Laura Lee recorded a much funkier version, which I absolutely love. And Lee Daniels, the director, put it in the movie The Paperboy. So I was really excited about that.
Yes, definitely.
So from The Glass House, right before that, I had been traveling the country with Charo doing backgrounds along with Carolyn Crawford, and that was a real wonderful experience. She was so fantastic. And then got the call about the Supremes. It was Lamont who had come out to California on business, and he ran into Mary Wilson at a party, and she said Gene Terrell, who had replaced Diana, was leaving the group and wanted to know, did he recommend anyone? Well, at that time, Lamont was my boyfriend, so naturally he recommended me. And so I spoke with Mary, sent out, some pictures and a copy of one of our albums, and then she called me a couple of days later after she received it. It was a Thursday, and asked if I could come out to California. And I said, "Well, okay." And then I thought about it later on that night, and I thought, "Am I crazy? This is the Supremes." I was so scared, and my mother gave me this big pep talk, as mothers will do most of the times. But my mother was a trooper behind myself and my sister, always. And so anyway, she gave me this big pep talk and that you can do it, blah, 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 blah. I said, okay. So that was a Thursday night. Saturday morning, I was on a flight to L.A., and Cindy Birdsong and her husband picked me up from the airport. We went right to Mary's house, suitcases and all, and started rehearsing on that Saturday because we had a date at New Mexico at the State Fair the following, I think it was Friday or Saturday. I had 1 week. So I thought, oh, my God. So, I didn't know a lot of those songs. So Mary said, well, learn what you can. And now I know some of the songs. I can sing the other parts, the lead. So that's how that started. So I did what I did. And the manager, Bill Lobe, at that time said, you can do this. Well, you got the job. And so they were very pleased. And I was ecstatic. I called my mom.
I'm sure of it. To be in the Supremes, what an honor. And one of the last Supremes. Tell me specifically, was that your biggest honor of your career, to be part of that group?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was something, because I grew up with the Supremes. I remember when I was at Michigan State, and I was in summer school at that time, and I was taking this class, quantitative analysis. And I was in a pre-med program and then subsequently changed to medical technology, which I graduated in. But I was taking this chemistry class. I was cutting through the dorm to go to the Quonset huts where we were doing experiments. And I heard this sound, and these girls had their door open. And I went in their room. And I said, oh, I love that. I said, what record is that? Because it was 45 back then.
Right.
And they said, oh, it's this new group out of Detroit called the Supremes. I said, what's the name of it? I've heard of them before. They had a little local hit. A song called Where Did I Love Go? It is still one of my absolute favorites. And, of course, I was a big fan that I remember. In fact, I was just thinking about it this morning. I saw them at Edgewater Park. And they were doing one of their little, one of the local songs they had done. And I can almost remember what they had on, these three little dresses and a big bow in the front. And then also, my sister, before that, my sister was singing at a banquet for our governor at that time. I think James G. Menon Williams was his name.
Okay.
And on the show also were the Supremes. I think it was four of them then. But I remember they sang Buttered Popcorn. And they went up on the stage. It was in some kind of like high school auditorium. And I think we were the only black people there, besides my parents, Freda, me, and the Supremes. And they sang the song. And I remember as they were exiting, they looked sort of scared, but I could really empathize with them. But I thought, oh, it's so wonderful. Oh, these are the girls. I've heard that song on the radio. And so anyway, they looked at me, I looked at them and smiled, and they smiled, and that was it. So then, who would know all these many years later,
that you'd be
in 1973,
part of it, yes,
that I would become a part of that legendary group?
It's tremendous, for sure. And tell us specifically, once you were part of that group, where did you travel to? Did you tour all over the place?
Oh, just about everywhere in the world. I couldn't have done it without them. That's the one thing I'm so grateful to God for. I got all that wonderful experience for free. We went to, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Japan, Malaysia, Singapore, Hong Kong,
wow.
Of course, England, Germany. We went everywhere except for Russia, I think.
So life after, so basically through that process, finally the Supremes were no more, right? Pretty much it was a situation where they just decided no longer to try to continue the group. What was what happened there in that process?
Well, that was in 77. Mary decided she was going to go solo. Actually, her husband had decided for her, and so she took that leap of faith. And so Motown said that they would continue the group with Stay, and we were to pick a third girl. So we tried out multiple singers, and even LaToya Jackson had been talked about. And but anyway, we decided on Joyce Vincent Wilson, who at that time had just left Tony Orlando and Dawn, or they actually had broken up. So, and Joyce is a longtime friend of mine from Detroit since 1968. That's when I met her at Invictus, and we've remained good friends until this day. We decided on Joyce, and we were all excited. And then the edict came down from Motown that since there was no original member in the group, that they were going to retire the group. So, to our dismay, no more Supremes. But then they thought, well, what are we going to do with Sherry and Toussaint? They didn't need another two more solo singers on the label. So they decided about partners. Actually, Suzanne came up with that name. Suzanne DePass took on the project, and that's how Partners evolved.
And so how did Partners do after so the Supremes? Was that a success as well?
Well, we thought it was. Well, actually, I didn't feel that Motown really promoted Partners. Mm-hmm. And I remember, of course, it was just an album form then, but I remember doing a session. Suzanne and I both did a session for Quincy Jones doing background. And I think it was James Ingram, Luther Vandross, Suzanne, me. I can't remember who, maybe Jim Gilstrap, another fabulous singer and close friend of mine. And I remember Luther saying that he was so honored to meet me, and he said, I just love that album by you and Suzanne. I said, well, it's an honor for me to meet you, too. And he was just a newcomer on the scene. And he told me, he said, that he had, I said, I love your new song and your new album. He said, he had been turned down by every record company in the city. Isn't that something? Somebody like Luther Vandross.
Unbelievable.
Well, that happens, you know, because I remember at Invictus Records, Laura Lee brought in Al Green, and he auditioned. And they said he couldn't sing. Whoa.
Exactly. So from that process, after the Partners, you continue to perform throughout your career, and then you got involved in other things as well, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of solo work. I did discos. I recorded some disco songs like One Night Only, I'm Not in Love, Pretends to See, which is in Deb. I can't think of her name. Oh, Lord. I'm a senior. I'm entitled. But anyway, my mind just went blank. But anyway.
That's okay.
it's my all-time favorite disco song, I'm Not in Love. And under the auspices and direction of Rick Giannotis, who was...
So you went into disco after that, one of my favorite time periods. So after disco, you were talking about also you do some writing as well. When did that start? Yeah. Would that start after you not stopped your singing career, but went into some other stuff?
Yeah, actually, I really sort of stopped singing, other than in my church, which at that time I was in Friendship Baptist Church in Pasadena, and I'm a member of First Baptist Church of North Hollywood, where I've been since, I think, 2001. But I virtually just stopped singing. I think I lost confidence in myself for some reason. I felt I couldn't sing. I was just having a lot of challenges, and maybe because of disappointment, I just believed the lie. And so I stopped even playing the piano, because before that I was writing songs, and I had so many songs, and then I just stopped playing the piano, singing. I had a beautiful daughter in 1985, and it was shortly thereafter I just started writing screenplays. I did the first two as a musical, 10 Good Years, and then The Dream Seekers, which I converted over to a straight screenplays thereafter, but I do have them as musicals, 10 Good Years of stage musical, and Dream Seekers as a straight musical, screenplay musical, and then a straight screenplay.
Wow. Definitely an interesting career, Sherry. And now it's kind of coming back around the corner, right? So you are working with, and through the success and the bring back of this genre of music. Now you definitely are in demand again. So tell me what your current, what projects you're currently doing right now, Sherry.
Well, of course, I still tour all over with Linda Lawrence, a former Supreme, who replaced Cindy Birdsong, and Joyce Vincent, who is with us. So she finally got to be a member of the former Supreme, Linda and myself, and also now the project with Toussaint, bringing partners back. So that's keeping me pretty busy.
Definitely, Sherry. So where can we find information on you, learn more about you? Where can we find info on you?
Oh, if you Google my name.
Absolutely. If we Google your name, Sherry, you're definitely in the history of Motown and the Supremes and the Partners. So people could check you out there and then also find out what you are doing currently in your touring and all that stuff by just looking online and finding that information. So thanks again for calling, Sherry, and best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Take care now. Thanks.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I tell you, this is a very, very interesting star. Think about it. Recording artist, actress. She does so many different things, and also from a famous family, for sure. And she is famous herself. So I want to welcome to the program, Kristinia DeBarge. Kristinia, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me, Neil.
Oh, I'm excited to talk to you. And I tell you, it's very interesting to look at, again, your family background and stuff like that, and then for how you've been able to make it successful yourself through your music and acting. Was it difficult at first, you know, having the DeBarge name to kind of make a name for yourself?
You know what? It's never been difficult having the DeBarge name. It's been difficult in other areas. I would say that, you know, it's just like any other person trying to make it in the industry. It's a very competitive industry to be in. But if you really love what you do and you're passionate about it, then it's not going to feel like work. You're going to do it no matter what. You're going to enjoy what you do. So, you know, I'm grateful to have the last name, and it's definitely helped me more than be difficult for me.
So growing up, how much were you involved learning about L. DeBarge and different things in your career before your career when you were younger? Tell us some of those stories.
Well, when I was younger, I really didn't know much about my family until my mom kind of educated me. And when I would meet different people who grew up listening to the DeBarges and Switch, they would be like, oh my gosh, you're a DeBarge. And I'd be like, is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? And, you know, and then I found out about my family lineage and, you know, how famous they were in the 80s. And then when I was 12, I told my dad that I wanted to be a singer because he didn't know I could sing until I was 12. I was singing pretty much since I could talk, but I hid it from him. So when I was 12, I came out and I said, Dad, I want to be a singer. And he took me on the road and he made me learn all the DeBarge songs. And then I was very educated on my family history. But, yeah, it was really cool to find out how famous they were and how well-respected they were in the industry and how many people like Beyonce and Biggie and Tupac and Mary J. Blige have covered DeBarge. So, you know, I'm honored. I feel very blessed to be a part of the DeBarge family.
So basically, your father, kind of tell us the family lineage for L. DeBarge. Explain that to us.
Yeah, my father is the brother to L. DeBarge. So L. is my uncle. My dad, a lot of people know him as the one that married Janet Jackson. And there's Randy. There's Bunny. And there's Marty. So all five of them are in the group. There was also Switch in the 70s. not very many people of my generation know about Switch, but some people of my generation know about DeBarge, but mostly people from my mom's generation know about DeBarge. But yeah, my father also had a solo career for a while, and he was working with DJ Quick and Snoop Dogg. And then, yeah, my uncle made a comeback a couple of years ago, and he's been doing his thing performing, and he and I actually did a cover of Rhythm of the Night 2 years ago for Cheryl Lee Ralph Foundation for AIDS, women with AIDS. So that was a lot of fun, and we got to perform that together. But yeah, it's been a very interesting last decade, you could say. I've been trying to pursue music, and, you know, I'm still on my way. So I feel blessed that I've even been able to put anything out and that people have been so receptive to what I have put out. And I'm really excited to share what I'm doing now.
Yeah, well, absolutely, and we're going to definitely get to that. And if you don't mind, I had one other interesting question about just learning from that, especially once you started singing, you got the opportunity to learn from so many people who knew your uncle, and also knew your father, that it was really a great situation to be part of that family, because you could really reach out to some very successful artists that could help you in your process and your journey. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did get to meet a lot of great people when I was on tour with my father. But when I was 14, I actually decided to follow and pursue music on my own without him. And that's when I met Babyface. And then from there, you know, the rest is history. I've been doing it all myself, and I was signed to Island Def Jam for a couple years, and then I went independent, and I've been independent ever since. But it's been a very interesting journey. I mean, I'm still just beginning, but every day I just wake up and I'm blessed and I'm grateful to be in the position that I am.
Well, Kristinia, I'm excited for you. I'm very excited, and I, when I ask these questions, in a lot of ways, thinking about it, you have something that's very important. You didn't use your name. You didn't use your. You went and made it yourself, but by able to reach out to so many different people and have those conversations with them, and learn from your father, learn from your uncle, it really helps you in the everyday being in this business, to understand the business, the little intricacies that are part of the business, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's most important to learn through your experiences. I mean, in any business that you're in, whether you're a lawyer or a doctor or a dentist, I mean, there's politics everywhere that you go, but there's also, you know, people that are going to try and knock you down and say that you can't do this, or that, you know, you're only in this industry because of your name. I mean, there's tons of kids in the industry or young adults like myself who have famous parents, and people are knocking them all the time because of their last name or because their parents have money or whatever it is. And, you know, if you really love what you do and you believe in yourself and you're a hard worker, you can show people that, hey, you know what? No, that's not true. I'm going to work hard for what it is that I want, and I'm going to get it, and I'm going to do it all by myself. And, you know, I'm not going to rely on the DeBarge last name. I'm going to rely on me and myself and I. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in that. So I don't believe in slacking. I don't believe in riding off the coattails of my family. I love them. I'm grateful to have a last name. I will never, ever change my name. That's a part of who I am for the rest of my life. And I just want to make sure that people like me for who I am.
Absolutely.
First before they just say, hey, oh, she's DeBarge. You know, like, I want them to see me, Kristinia, for who I am. An artist and a person.
But you're very likable already talking to you. So I have, and again, looking at your Twitter and looking at your followers and looking at the buzz that you have, you're doing a lot of smart things, being a jack of all trades, not just the recording. But give us first some updates in music. And I know you have other projects as well, for sure. Tell us what's going on with your music.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I actually just finished recording and writing, I guess you could say, my third album. because I came out with a sophomore album in Japan called Young and the Restless. But I'm not going to give out the name for the third album yet, but I'm really excited about it. I have the name, but I kind of want to keep it a surprise. But I will tell you guys what my some of the songs are called on the new album. I have a record called Fade Out that is coming out pretty soon. I already shot the video for it last week. I'm performing it at Pride, LA Pride, this Sunday in West Hollywood. And I'm also going to perform my new single, Don't Fall in Love. And I have another song called Medusa and Murder. So there's the songs are very interesting. The titles are interesting. But it's a whole new me. It's I'm going in a completely different direction. It's still pop, but it's more urban pop. So you're going to get to see a more edgy, sexy, grown side of me instead of the safe side of me. So I'm excited for people to see this other side of Christina, this alter ego. The music is really hot. I've teamed up with a small group of producers and writers. I believe in not having too many producers because the sound needs to be cohesive, and I don't want to have it kind of sounding all over the place. But the great thing is I'm a lot more creative on this album. I have more creative control than I did on the first album. So you get to see more of really who I am as an artist, not just kind of what people want me to be. So I'm stoked. I mean, I have a really good feeling about Pride. And I know that so far the feedback has been really good. I mean, people are tweeting me, when is Don't Fall in Love come out? When is Fade Out come out? People are excited. So,
well, that's great.
Yeah.
You're a very likable person, Christania, and that's the cool thing about it. And what I think it's cool about it is you really seem very passionate about what you're doing. You really are. You're going to show our listeners out there that don't know who you are in this interview to say, okay, she didn't just use the name. She has done so much more than that. And that's what we're talking about. But performing at LA Pride, tell us about what's going on, the excitement of Sunday for our listeners, especially because we are going to release the interview before LA Pride the day of. So for people out in LA that are listening to the show and stuff, what's going on? When are you going to be performing at LA Pride on Sunday? At what time?
So yes, I am performing at LA Pride on Sunday at 5:30 PM. And I will be singing Goodbye, of course. So I'm going to open up the show with Goodbye. I'm going to sing Fade Out. I'm going to sing Don't Fall in Love. I'm going to sing Murder, and I'm going to sing Thousand Angels. So I can't wait to show all of you guys all of these new songs. I can't wait to share with you my new movement, all of the stories of my life and things that I'm experiencing now and things that I have experienced. And it's going to be a really fun show. I can't wait to be with my gays. I love my gays. They are the most loyal fans. You know, we're just going to have a good time. That's what it's all about. It's, you know, happiness is, I always say this, and I'm a firm believer of this. Happiness is not a destination. It is about the journey. So, you know, that's my philosophy in life. Live every day like it's your last, because you never know. You know, tomorrow is not promised. And, I'm excited to see the reaction. I'm going to be selling T-shirts. They're not going to have my picture on it, but they are going to have hashtag, saying things that I say now, slogans, stuff like that.
Cool.
Very, very much into today's pop culture. But it's going to be things that, you know, people will want to wear. So I'm excited. I can't wait to show all of you guys. And, we're definitely going to probably shock a few people with some of the things that we're doing on stage. So it's going to be a good time.
Performance is an important thing. But then what's surprising, Kristania, is that shocks me more than anything is, you know, you're a recording artist, but you're an actress as well, and you're going to be in a big film. So tell us specifically, and as people that need to follow you at Kristania, they're going to see specifically enough that you're not just a singer, but also an actress. So tell us specifically, when did you get involved in acting and especially the latest project?
Well, I kind of been acting on and off since I was 13, but it wasn't sticking right away. So I just decided to follow my music more passionately, which I've always been more passionate about, but I always knew that I wanted to act as well. So one day, I think I was 19, Island Def Jam, the label I used to be signed to, they approached me and said, "Hey, we got you an audition for a film. Are you interested?" I said, "Absolutely." So I went and auditioned for this movie called Christmas in Compton. So I did that a couple of years ago. That was a lot of fun. And then after that, I'm really good friends with Nick Cannon. And Nick Cannon approached me about this movie called School Dance that he wrote and directed himself, his first movie that he wrote and directed. So this is a huge deal to him. And he was like, "I'd like for you to audition." I auditioned, to be honest. You know, I hadn't acted in a long time. I was kind of rusty. I hadn't been at any acting auditions in a while or classes. So I wasn't sure if I was going to get the part. So, you know, a couple weeks went by, and I was like, "Oh, my gosh, you know, I probably didn't get the part." And then he called me. I went to go meet with him, and great news. You got the part. Not only did you get the part, you got the lead.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, "Oh, my gosh." I was freaking out, and I just felt so honored and just extremely grateful. So I started right away. We filmed the whole thing in about a month and a half time, and I got to sing also in the movie, just like I did in the other movie that I filmed. And I made a lot of friends. There's a great cast in the movie: Wilmer Valderrama, George Lopez, Amber Rose, Cat Williams, Mike Epps, Lou and Alan Campbell, Little Duval, also Kevin Hart. I mean, it's a great cast. So I just felt like, wow, this is too good to be true. I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is a dream." But I'm extremely excited. I filmed it about a year and a half to 2 years ago. It's a Lionsgate film. It comes out July 2nd. It's going to be in Flex Theaters and also on demand in HD. I'm the lead. I play Anastasia. And, make sure you guys all go out and see it. It's going to be extremely funny. I got to see a screening of it like a year ago, but I know they've made a lot of edits and stuff like that since then. So I'm sure they've made it even better. I mean, I was cracking up then, so I think people are really going to enjoy it. But make sure you guys follow me on Twitter at Kristania. Follow me on Instagram at Kristania Deb, KristianiaDeb. And I'm also on Facebook, Kristania DeBarsh. So, yeah, please just keep up with me online, social media. I do respond to my fans every now and then. And, you know, I'm just really excited. I haven't really been able to put out any new music in a while. So this is a huge deal for me.
This seems like everything is coming into place in 2014, especially in the summer of 2014. So I wish you all the luck. And then when you do release the name of your album, I'm going to have to contact your publicist and say, "You're coming on to come on my show first to tell me about this." Okay. Is that a deal?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You got a deal.
Absolutely. All right. So cool. Good talking to you. And I can't wait to see the film and stuff. So best of luck in everything. And thanks for taking the time. And good luck on Sunday. Okay.
Thank you. Pleasure is all mine.
All right. Take care. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show. And we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network again, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And, you know, anytime I get a former professional wrestler on the program, myself being a former professional wrestler, and I get to talk to a superstar like this that had to break into the business, had to do the same types of deals that I had to do, pay his dues to get to where he's at. So I'm so excited. Welcome to the program, TNA Tag Team Champion, former ROH Heavyweight Champion, Davey Richards. Davey, how are you, man?
Good, man. How are you?
Fantastic. So tell our listeners specifically a little bit of your background, then we're going to get into how you broke into the business.
I was an amateur wrestler in high school and college. I come from a small farming community in a rural Washington state, and just went to college and got a biology degree, which can't do a whole lot with, and just kind of always wanted to be competitive, and, you know, I didn't, MMA hadn't broken out yet, and especially in my area. So I was watching Tough Enough one night, and I was like, oh, you know, I can do that. And I used to watch it as a kid with my grandparents and was a fan of it. So I packed up my stuff and drove to Atlanta and just made it happen, and or at least I'm attempting to make it happen. And the rest, as they say, is on Wikipedia.
It definitely is on Wikipedia. So you drove to Atlanta. So tell us the story of that. So you were an amateur wrestler, which helps a lot, I'll tell you. I'm 6'10", Davey, and I was not an amateur wrestler. So being a big giant in this business, I learned you better learn how to defend yourself and learn some amateur moves, or you're going to get stretched many times by many superstars in the business. But having that amateur background, it made it very easy to be trained, didn't it? Because of just understanding just holds and specific things that made it very quickly to get a smooth transition to the pro game. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And you just have an athlete's mindset to where, you know, even when you're sore and you're tired and you're beat up and you think you can't, you definitely know that the mind's going to quit before the body. So, I mean, that definitely, you know, helped me out and played to my advantage.
And from that advantage. So when you went to Atlanta, who trained you in Atlanta?
Paul Arndorf and Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker.
So you went to the WCW camp? Is that where you...
Yeah, it was... WCW had already gone out of business, but some guy named Frank had bought the school and the rings and the trainer. So, like, it was the same guy, same rings, everything the same, but obviously no WCW backing.
I see. So, but you got to work with some legends in the game for sure to teach you the business. So you learned the psychology very quickly and stuff like that through the training, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm definitely trying, but yeah, I definitely was taught good fundamentals and everything.
Absolutely. So from being trained in Atlanta, where did you head?
Atlanta, let me see. I went back to Washington, realized there was no real wrestling there, so I moved to Los Angeles. And then from Los Angeles, I moved to Charlotte. From Charlotte to St. Louis, and then moved over to Japan for a few months, and then back to St. Louis.
Oh, wow. So in different leagues, you worked in different things like that. What would you say your biggest break? When going to Japan, was that the big break that kind of brought your career to another level?
No, I would honestly say coming to St. Louis was the biggest one where I really started to, like, break out. I already had a job in Japan, so I didn't need to move over there. I just, you know, read the books about Benoit and Dynamite and those guys who were, like, you know, they stayed and trained over there. And, you know, I wanted to pay the same kind of dues they did. So I went over there and just trained. And, you know, it was a really good experience.
What would you say was the most challenging thing working in Japan?
It's really honestly, like, A, it's considered a sport over there.
Right.
So it works a lot more, you know, compact and a lot more snug, and you know, it's training all the time, you know, this isolation, you know, you can't just go out and speak the language or go out and just, you know, make friends and, you know, like that, because you're kind of a stranger in a strange land. So it's isolation is definitely tough, but, you know, you're there to wrestle, and that's what I concentrated on, was wrestling.
And I think about that when I went to work in Ottawa, in Germany, that it was in Bremen. It was the same deal, man. It's very tight. The ring was like concrete, and a lot of the people didn't know it was a work. The fans didn't know it was a work. And in a lot of ways, I think that's when the business was great, you know, when people still didn't understand the secrets of it and different things. And it was really a lot of showmanship and a lot of just old school wrestling in Germany. And that's, I'm sure, the same deal in Japan.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so they basically were that you guys still keep it. They're not as many smart marks in Germany then, pretty much. I mean, in Japan, would you say? That they keep it more...
just a lot more casual fans of wrestling. It's a lot... It's respected as a sport over there, so it's a lot more... less smart fans and stuff, more of just casual fans, you know, kind of like a baseball fan or whatnot.
Or like bullfighting in a way in Spain, where people just go, or Mexico, just for the event of it, and treat it like a sport, not sports entertainment like we do in the U.S. I understand completely.
Right.
So, Davey, you would say probably Ring of Honor was the big break. Where would you say that big break before TNA? When did that kind of, you got on the map? You say St. Louis. What was going on in St. Louis? That's where I'm missing the was there a promotion in St. Louis?
No, I would just say while living in St. Louis, I